Kick off summer with Memorial Day savings at Lowe's. Right now, get five Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. Plus, get up to 40% off select major appliances and save an extra $50 on every $500 you spend on select major appliances $396 or more. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 5/28. Mulch offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details.
When that robot voice comes in, you know it is time to begin. And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to
ELC.
Woo! Especially if you're one of our geeks and sneaks using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Or hey, maybe you're enjoying that spring air, sneezing your way through a stroll outside. Whatever the case, we're going to be in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be. And that is completely free, thanks to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. Those amazing people bring this show to you. Their generosity, their support means we get to make the show. And boy, are we grateful. In exchange, they get some cool perks, including ad-free versions of the show, video versions of the show on demand, and a whole bunch of bonus content, extra stuff to listen to and watch, including Feeling This with Christian Spicer and Alex Solomon talking about the feelings behind video games. It's a whole show, multiple seasons of that show, available for patrons only. You got your Wednesday paid DLC program, where Landon Bashinsky joins us to talk about all the wacky stuff the patrons want to talk about. It's irreverent. It's wild. Sometimes we need to really dig in to the changes that have happened since 1977. The reason that Queen changed the world. Yeah, I can't explain it to you. You got to be a patron to understand it at patreon.com/DLCpod. But this show, the main show, DLC, it's the show all about games and their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata. That's spelled with two N's and one T. And I am joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis, the guy who always gets his taxes in on time, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello, Jeff. Hello, everyone. Speaking of Feeling This, Mr. Alex Solomon and I have been chatting. We're in the pre-pro, if you will, pre-production of the next season of Feeling This, where he's been busy, I've been busy, but we got our spreadsheet of topics we want to hit so patrons can look forward to that coming, you know, soon-ish.
What will that be? That'll be season four, I believe.
Season four, yeah. We're still trying to feel it.
Well, someday I hope you will.
One day,
folks, we have a huge show for you. This is going to be a fun one. We got lots to dig into. We got tons of games that have been announced, more direct style, video game premieres, world premieres, new information to talk about. We got, Bungie's next big game to get into. We got a lot of games that we have been playing that are awesome. And we have an awesome guest to do all of that with. You know, the DLC always stands for your downloadable Cannata and your downloadable Christian. But I'm excited because this week DLC stands for Don't Leave Circulation, because we have the executive editor at one of our favorite publications. And it's back, ladies and gentlemen. It's back. Game Informer's own Brian Shea is with us for the first time. Hey, Brian, how are you?
I'm doing so well. I could run through a wall after listening to that intro. Goodness gracious, you guys. Just bringing the energy, bringing the excitement. I like it.
Well, we're pretty excited. We're fans of Game Informer, and we covered the sad demise, the report that it was going away here on the show with a lot of regret. And the fact that you're back, it's Christmas come early.
Yeah, it was one of those kind of situations where, like, I heard rumblings that it might happen. There were discussions going on as early as, like, September of last year. I mean, we were closed down in early August. And, it started off as, like, oh, this would be, like, a cool thing if it ever happened. But it's probably never going to happen. Like, what are the odds that somebody would, you know, reach out, buy the brand, and not only that, but hire everybody back. And from the very early stages, this new parent company, they wanted to ensure that, you know, not only are they getting the brand, they wanted to reach out to the staff and see if they could get as many people back as possible. And but it still, it felt like such a long shot early on. And then as the months started rolling on, it sounded like, you know, a little bit more certain here and there. And then, like, you know, month by month, just I felt like the percentages were rising. And then around December, it started feeling like, hey, this might be like pretty close to a sure thing. And then sure enough, early on in 2025, we got some, what I think a lot of people would say, some rare good news. And yeah, that was that we were, in fact, coming back. And that was one miracle. And the other miracle is that we got 100% of our staff back, which 100% of the staff that was there in August when we were shut down, not just the editors, but like our programmers, our designers, our like kind of like logistical people, like everybody is back, which is wild because some of them have moved on with other jobs. A lot of us were doing freelance and like kind of starting our own projects. Like I had my podcast that I was ramping up that I started in 2021, but when GI was closed, I really kind of used that as kind of the centerpiece of all of the work that I was doing in kind of like the gig economy ecosystem. But you know, a lot of us had either moved on to a new job or started our own projects or intensified our own projects. So the fact that everybody was so excited to come back is not only like a testament to how much we love doing this, but like how much we loved putting out this magazine that, you know, I think I speak for a lot of people on the team. It's like, not only like, were we sad that we lost our jobs, we were sad that like our favorite magazine was no longer going to be around. Yeah. But also it was a testament to the fact that we loved working with each other and, you know, doing what we have been able to do. Game Informer's been around coming up on 34 years now. I've been there for just over 10 of those years. So, you know, it's just something that I almost couldn't imagine my life without. And it never felt like it truly went away, even though like logically I had accepted it was gone. I was still like, kind of my heart was still like in I still want to keep doing this by any means necessary. And, you know, by some 1, 2, 3, 4 multiple miracles, we are back.
It's an amazing thing. As you laid out there, it's just one of those things that just doesn't ever happen, you know. Mm-mm. That you can get, not only, you know, bring, you know, sometimes things will come back in name only or whatever, but the fact that it really is exactly as it was when it ended, that all the same folks are going to be contributing, is just it's just a wild thing. And we're so happy to hear it and see it, and happy for you and happy for the team and happy to have our favorite magazine back as well. So
thank you.
Congratulations.
I appreciate that.
All right, let's we got so much to get into this week. So let's jump right in and start the show the way we always do, with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. You can also send comments, questions, anything you'd like us to know. We love hearing from you. dlcfeedback@gmail.com is the email, but it's not the only way to reach out. You can also hang out in our Discord, which is 5x5 DLC on Discord. Lots of great folks hanging out there. But Brian, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
I mean, I've bounced around this topic so much on like between Game Informer and my podcast and everything. I think it's still probably like the if I'm being honest, this is not the thing that I want to talk about. I'm just saying the story of the week for me has been this whole like drama of tariffs and the Switch pre-order and all that stuff. Mm. But I think that the thing that I most want to talk about is the avalanche of announcements and trailers that we got out of the III Interactive showcase that happened earlier this week.
Yes, really cool focus on indie games. And boy, as you said, were there a lot of games in this showcase. Some big world premieres, some stuff we had not known about at all, some updates to popular games like Vampire Survivors, just a whole gamut of things to talk about. So what caught your eye, Brian? What are the, you know, two or three things from this show, two or three games from the III initiative that you'd like to bring up first?
So when I look at like all of the headlines that came out of this, the one that I immediately gravitated towards was The Altars getting its June 13th release date. And the reason for that is I had the opportunity to fly out to Poland last year, and I spent a few hours playing The Altars, and I came away extremely impressed by that. And, you know, I was kind of disappointed when it was delayed out of last year into this year. We didn't know when it was going to be coming out prior to this past week. And, you know, it's that old kind of balancing of like, all right, I'm disappointed I don't get to play it right away, but I hope that this means that the game's going to be better. So that is my hope of hopes, is that this game, like, you know, maybe they were overly ambitious saying it was going to come out last year. And I mean, clearly they were, if they didn't think it was ready. And then, you know, here we are, we finally have a date. It is about a week after the Switch 2 is coming out, which is a little concerning for me. But that was the thing that immediately caught my eye right off the bat. I'm so excited for that game. But there were a couple of other one was a world premiere. The other one was a first gameplay look that really caught my eye after I watched the entire thing.
Well, let's start with The Altars. And I think we had known about this game, as you said, for quite a while. The idea being it is, what is that Sam Rockwell movie, Moonlight? Is that the one? Yeah, Moonlight, right? Well, the one where he plays a bunch of versions of himself on the moon. Is that Moonlight? Moon something. Anyway, maybe it's just Moon. I think it's just Moon.
Somebody, I think you're thinking me. Michael Keaton in Multiplicity. Yeah.
Oh, there was David Bowie's son directed a movie called, I think it's called just called Moon. Anyway, point is, in The Altars, you play a bunch of versions of the same guy. And I think that's kind of the extent of what I understood about that. You know, you're going to be venturing out into this alien planet trying to survive, et cetera, et cetera. But I didn't really have understanding of mechanically how it was going to work, I think, until this trailer in this week. And I think it really did a good job of laying out the structure of the game. And I think this is much more ambitious than I was originally conceiving of. Maybe I just didn't grok the previous trailers in a way that maybe it was clearer to others. But for me, this is the first one where I really was like, oh, this game really does look like it has a lot going on. And Brett, you said you had hands-on with it already?
Yeah, so last year I went out to Warsaw, Poland, sat down, played. This was kind of a dual event where we got to play Frostpunk 2, which is now out, and a quite good game as well, and The Altars, two games by the same studio. This is also the same studio that did This War of Mine, which is also a very good game. And this is something a little bit different from what they've done. Like, it's like kind of like multiple genres mashed into one with this extremely interesting hook of like, hey, it's kind of a multiverse story, kind of like a sci-fi, like, you know, what if story type of deal going on. So you play this guy, John Dolsky, and he basically, it's kind of like in this dead end life. And it's, I think, sometime in the near future where, like, they have identified planets across the solar system or across even just, like, the galaxy at large that have, like, this precious mineral that they want to send you off to. So you get signed up for this trip to this other planet in another galaxy or somewhere else. And you go to land and something goes wrong and your entire drop team is killed. You're the only survivor. And there's a mobile base that you need to get to. So, like, that's the opening. You get to the mobile base, and then it's like, all right, the mobile base is damaged as well. We need to get this thing operational. So during the day, and there's like this weird day-night cycle and also like a month cycle. So you are, during the day, going out onto the surface of this planet and finding resources, basically kind of survival game style, where it's like, okay, well, I need this to upgrade this particular like component of my base, or I need this so I can cook dinner tonight. And so you're going out on this surface, doing what you can. And then as night starts coming, this radiation storm kicks up. So you need to get back to the base and take shelter for the night. And while you're in the base, you know, you can improve it. So it has base building mechanics on top of the survival mechanics. And then there's also this scenario of like, all right, the day night cycle is happening, but there are three suns of this in this this solar system. So that sun that's doing the day night one keeps rising and setting on a daily cycle. this other sun keeps rising. But the thing is that sun is so strong that it incinerates anything it touches. So you need to get this mobile base operational by the time this deadline hits so you can roll it out of there and outrun the sunrise, essentially. And he quickly learns that, like, oh, well, this is going to be a task way too big for me. And he, like, starts giving up. And the computer, the AI in the computer or somebody on the other line tells him, like, hey, like, there is one option for you. Like, we know your entire team was killed. You can go to this machine. We have your genetics in our system. And he's like, what? How'd you get that? And what they do is they map out the various, like, kind of key decision moments in his life. And it's like, all right, well, this is when you dropped out of school. What if you kept going in school? Mm. And so he accesses, like, okay, well, what if I stayed in school and, like, pursued this and became a scientist? And then you enter that is, like, the data point you want to access. And it takes materials you've collected and it creates a clone of Jan. And it's not a straight clone, though, because it is the version that would have happened if he did this other thing. Or, like, what if he decided to work it out with his wife instead of getting a divorce? And it's, like, right. all these different, like, key moments. Or, like, what if he stopped this armed robbery that he witnessed when he was a kid or a teenager or something? And each one has different skills. So, like, oh, all right, well, this one's a mechanic, so he's good at fixing stuff. And this one's a scientist. This one's a chef. So, like, all of these different versions of Jan have these, like, different specialties. So you got to build your team comp. And talking to the developers, they were like, you know, there's no way to get all of them. So you have to be very meticulous about, like, which ones you pursue. And it seems like it's a pretty substantial balancing act that you have to play. And you have to be quite strategic as you kind of make your way across this planet.
Yeah, it looked like it was, you know, part sort of third person action exploration, part base building management, you know, resource management sim, and then part like relationship manager with all these personalities that are clashing, and you have to sort of assuage all of their, you know, ways of going insane on this base, you know, kind of a what Darkest Dungeon style, you know, insanity simulator.
Yeah,
it looks really cool.
It's one of those things where it's like, yeah, it's like the same person. So, like, they have, like, kind of maybe some of the same, like, instinctual tendencies of their personality. But then it's like, but they have completely different life experiences. Like, this one guy was like, you know, he got his doctorate and the other guy dropped out in the first semester. And it's like, so because of that, they also clash in interesting ways. But then they also have, like, kind of the same temper and same, like, you know, ways of dealing with conflict. So from, like, the limited number of interactions that I was able to watch with a limited number of yawns, it was pretty fascinating to see how these different characters are going to interact as you add to your team.
Looks very cool. I guess I didn't have to go back to 2009's Moon as a reference because we got Mickey 13 this year.
Yes.
Could have said Mickey 13. And also, what's the other one that just left my brain?
Michael Keaton.
Multiplicity.
Multiplicity. We've covered it already.
Yeah. Anyway, that looks very cool. Alters is coming soon. As you said, June 13th is the date that was revealed at this event. You said you had two other games you wanted to mention from the Triple I initiative.
Yeah. So, like, real quick, like, I'm a diehard Vampire Survivors fan. So it's always cool to see more collaborations there. It was interesting that they went with Saga instead of other Square Enix franchises. I am hopeful that it's going to be kind of like a Konami situation where they are like, all right, well, we got Contra and Castlevania from Konami. Maybe they struck a deal. Like, all right, we'll do Saga first. And then at Summer Game Fest or something, we'll announce that Final Fantasy is coming to Vampire Survivors. So that's a very quick shout out that I wanted to give. But the two that I really, that caught my eye were Voidbreaker and Into the Fire.
Oh, Into the Fire looks so wild. But yeah, let's start with Voidbreaker because that was sort of the last game of the showcase, the kind of the mic drop game. This looks like a pretty wild, it was a world premiere, a pretty wild first person shooter. What caught your eye about it?
I think it's visually stunning. It seems like you're going to have some really cool modifications you can put on the gun. It maybe even some kind of psychic telekinetic powers where you're able to, like, kind of manipulate the environment around you as you fight off this, like, relentless horde of AI attackers, I guess. Like,
yeah,
it looks like it's going to be pretty intense, pretty trippy. Like I said, visually stunning. It's a good looking game. And
yeah,
Yeah, I mean, PlayStack has been on a really great run after, you know, riding the wave of momentum from publishing Bellatro. It seems like they kind of have that magic of like, hey, we know like a good game when we see one, and we kind of enter, we snatch them up into these publishing agreements. And, you know, they've had some pretty big hits over the last few years. So I'm excited to see if this is another one.
Yeah, they went into detail about, you know, a lot of the customization. You know, you'd be able to find these mods and combine them in pretty, I think, emergent ways, ways that, you know, there's just a lot of different varieties of building out your weapon and customizing how you're going to be able to play this game. And, you know, I don't think we get a lot of these kind of big high profile shooters these days. I think that the industry's kind of moved away from this, and it's nice to see one getting the spotlight. Void slash Breaker does look pretty cool. But Into the Fire is certainly one that caught my eye. This being a game, third person action game, it does have some shootery elements, but as the developers were quick to point out, you're not shooting things to destroy them. You're trying to save people. This is a game that was inspired by a documentary that came out last year or a couple years ago, about this couple that were obsessed with chronicling volcanoes. And Into the Fire is set at a catastrophic volcano eruption, and you have to sort of surge into the fire and try to save as many people as you can, even though you will not be able to save everyone. It just looks like a completely different kind of game, and might visually amazing as well.
Yeah, and it's one of those where it's like, okay, on the surface, it's like, oh, yeah, there's a volcanic eruption. Your job is to save as many humans and animals as possible. You have, like, weapons that have been repurposed to be, like, to be fire extinguishing. Like, there's, like, a fire extinguisher pistol and a shotgun and, like, yeah, fire extinguishing grenades that you can throw out, which is kind of cool. Yeah. But then on top of that, like, it seems like this story is going places, because there's, like, it's like, oh, yeah, you can use, like, you know, retro style weaponry to put out the fire, or you can participate in dark rituals. And I'm like, wait, what was that?
yeah I guess there's, you know, it's like it's man versus nature until it isn't. Like, I guess there's also a faction that you'll encounter in this game, so who knows where it goes. But certainly what they showed, the representation of the fire and lava and just the heat in the game is pretty visually striking. And the fact that you're in this, you know, kind of fire retardant suit and just being able to walk directly into areas that usually video games are telling you, that's not where you walk. pretty amazing looking game. Into the Fire is what it's called. And it's going to be in early access this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that one really caught my eye.
Yeah. 35 games evidently that were shown at the Triple I Initiative. Christian Spicer, do you have any others that jumped out to you?
I will play my role here and just say I loved the getting the update on the Katana Zero DLC. I loved Katana Zero. I thought it was so cool. And the DLC was first mentioned 3 years ago?
I mean, 6 years ago.
Okay, so yeah, I forget. Three plus COVID, you know, whatever. And I love that it's still coming. I love that it's free still. A lot of times, you know, you'll hear something will kind of get reworked or brought back or something happens and then, or the scope grows. But man, Katana Zero, I think, is such a special game. There's a lot of games that do things similar, but I think few that kind of hit that perfect mix of frenetic action. Again, I describe it. If you haven't played it, go play it. But it's frenetic action, 2D pixel art, side scroller, but the way that it does it and the story is also really interesting, and hearing that this picks up right after the end of the game and continues that story, I think could be really special. So I'm stoked for that whenever it comes.
They did say it's coming to a close, like development is ending soon basically, and it's like but we still don't have a date for you, which I thought was pretty funny.
There's so many things to pick out of this. I was enamored by a number of games. I think, you know, Into the Fire is certainly one of them. Dusk Fade is a game that jumped out to me. It reminded me of Dark Cloud and Dark Cloud 2 that were like the PS1, PS2 era games. And the developer for Dusk Fade, Weird Beluga Studios, is not shy in saying that this is kind of a love letter to those old action platformers from a bygone era. And it visually looks really beautiful. Has a kind of, you know, bright color palette. Just
it is not Dusk Bloods. Double yeah. Dusk games, very different right. games.
I'm sure they'll take the
Wilds,
rub, though.
Outer Worlds.
they're happy to take the dusky rub of the from Dusk Bloods. But yeah, Duskblade looked really cool. Ikuma, the Frozen Compass, jumped out at me as well. Another game that the visuals, I think, are really different and have a very specific look to them that nobody else has. And this is one where you're sort of exploring. It's kind of light survival stuff. And you got a dog, and you can play co-op, split screen couch co-op, where one person is the guy and one person is the dog.
I'm sold.
Gotta love that. That's not that one's not coming until 2026. It's called Ikuma, the Frozen Compass. I also noticed there were not one, but two get yourself lost in a car in the wilderness camper games. one was called Over the Hill, and the other was called, oh gosh, what was it? Outbound. Outbound and Over the Hill. Two, like, go out and get in a camper and just get lost and have adventures, which I love. I love these indie games where it's like, you know, the goal isn't killing things or destroying. It's just like, go out and enjoy nature. And I think of the two, Over the Hill looked to me like the most compelling. Over the Hill, I would venture to say, you know, feels to me like one of the first Death Stranding likes, if I may coin a subgenre. When Death Stranding first came out, I was like, man, I think Kojima just invented a new kind of game, this kind of like traversal.
He said he did.
Yeah,
so.
he said as much. He said Strand games.
There you go. Strand, yeah. It's a Strand game. Look at me. I'm just ripping off the master. But no, I feel like this might be one of the first, because it looks like that's exactly what Over the Hill is about, is, you know, how do you traverse this? Get up this hill, basically. Just how do you get up this hill in your car? And it's a co-op experience where, you know, you get in trouble and your friends can throw you a winch and pull you out of the swamp or the crevice that you fell into in your car. Looks really cool. I'm into it. Others that you guys may have wanted. I also think we got a Balatro like in Clover Pit, which is another way of kind of taking gambling and rogue lighting it.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I'm into it.
Rematch is one that stuck out to me. Mm-hmm. You know, I liked Sifu quite a bit, and to have their next game be a soccer game, that's a cool thing. I'm interested. It's piqued my intrigue.
I got a chance to play that. I'll be talking about that in the playlist. So I got a chance to play the test beta this weekend. So
every I'll time talk your about player little... tears their ACL, you lose a year and you come back
yeah.
a year older. Yeah. And
you they become compete. A Sifu. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm also, as somebody who absolutely loves the Heroes of Might and Magic franchise, the fact that here's the Might and Magic Olden Era, which is a very funny subtitle. Oh, it's the Olden Era. Old, it's old. I don't know, from an old timey time. Excited about that. Although they didn't show anything other than a kind of cinematic trailer.
But it's soon. It's early. Early access is this summer. So like,
yeah,
there's something there cooking. But yeah, they didn't show anything in this presentation.
Yeah, it's hard to judge if they're not going to show us any gameplay stuff. There's so much. Like I said, 35 different games. Any other things you guys want to pull out?
You touched on Dusk Fade already. That was one I wanted to shout out. Yeah. The Eternal Life of Goldman looked like a pretty good-looking game.
I agree. Interesting, too, the way that they positioned it in this presentation, which is coming at it from a musical angle, like who are the composers, and the fact that there's, I guess, like half a dozen composers making music for this game. Pretty wild.
See if there's anything else that caught my eye. I'm just going to scroll through real quick here.
Yeah, please do.
I mean, I'm a big Dead Cells fan, to see Blaze Blue Entropy Effect getting a Dead Cells crossover, that's cool. I wish they would have announced a console version instead of just like, you know, alongside that crossover. Speedrunners 2. I liked the first Speedrunners game.
which was like a decade ago that game came out.
I think it was like 20. I remember playing it like in like 2011 or 2012 at like a PAX West or something, or PAX East. But yeah, I mean, that I think that's covers most of the highlights that I call
tons
out.
Tons of stuff in here. The indie scene definitely alive and well and thriving in the as evidenced in the III initiative. Half a dozen things that I'm just like, wow, I can't wait to play that. Deep Rock Galactic Survivor got its 1.0 release date in September. I've been playing that in early access. It's really good. Yeah, lots of really cool stuff here. So I thought that, you know, and the way they did this, which was, you know, no host, no commercials, just back to back to back to back trailers. Can't argue with that. I think that's very effective. And then afterwards doing deep dives on a few select titles where you have the sort of developer interviews and more stuff. I think that's a very strong way to show things. It just get the trailers out and then go back, circle back and get stuff a little deeper and take a little longer time for stuff that you might want to be, you know, more interested in. Good stuff, I thought. All right. Before we get to the next story of the week, we're going to take a little break for a sponsor. We'll be right back right after this. This episode of DLC is brought to you by Factor. It's springtime, and I still don't have time for lunch. The flowers are blooming, and I'm still stuck in my office, and I don't want to go anywhere for lunch. I don't want to. How do I eat delicious food, give the nutrition that I need without, you know, I don't know, doing anything or going anywhere? Well, the answer is Factor. Nutritious 2-minute meals from Factor. Eating well has never been this easy. You just heat it up and enjoy, giving you more time to do what you want. Christian, more time to do what you want. That seems like a magical notion.
I mean, the best part about it, Jeff, is that it doesn't need to just be lunches. I don't know about you. We're a very busy family over here. We got different youth sports. I'm coaching. I'm reffing. Yeah. I'm playing video games. I'm doing all the other things I want to do. And when you're very busy, Factor makes a great din-din. So you have time to do that other stuff you also want to be doing other than planning, prepping, sweating, laboring.
Yeah.
That's, you can just be eaten.
It's there whenever you need it. It's there whenever you need it. With 2-minute meals, you can get outside instead of prepping and cooking indoors. The Factor meals arrive fresh and ready to eat. Perfect for that active lifestyle that Christian's talking about. Or like me, some sort of hermit mongrel ogre person living at my computer in my office in the cave that I live in. They have 45 weekly menu options, and you can pick gourmet meals that fit your goals. You can choose from calorie smart, protein plus, keto, and more. And Factor powers your day with satisfying breakfasts as well, on the go lunches, premium dinners, and guilt-free snacks and desserts. It's easy to savor more this spring. Factor meals pack in the flavor with none of the fuss. I absolutely love having these in the fridge. They're delicious. They really are very, very good. There's a mushroom chicken one that I really love. There's a
they have a deconstructed tamale, which is just
so
incredible.
Good. Get started yourself at factormeals.com/DLC50off and use code DLC50off. That's DLC50OFF to get 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. That's code DLC50OFF at factormeals.com/DLC50OFF for 50% off plus free shipping. All right, Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
I also need to acknowledge tariffs. They are the biggest story of the week, but I don't want to spend time talking about it because I think by the time people listen to this, there's a chance it will be cured or worse
or both.
People have made $1 billion off of insider trading. And so it was a big story. We still can't pre-order the Nintendo Switch 2 in the United States. They have not announced a date.
Or Canada.
Or in Canada. We're dragging them down.
Yeah.
As of we're recording this, by the time you're listening to it, maybe that'll change. Maybe by the end of the Mario Kart World Direct this week, we'll get information. So, you know, tip of the cap, that's the biggest story. That will remain the big, hey, there's an exception for computer chips. Just kidding. No one said there is an exception for computer chips. Like, whatever, you know? So, yes, huge story. We are not going to get to the bottom of it on this podcast.
it's a story in the way that a feral cat is a pet, you know? Like, yeah, maybe someday it'll be a story. But right now, you can't grab it and catch it and hold it down long enough to do anything with it. So, you know, we're not going to be able to talk about it because it won't let us get close enough to pet it, basically.
So I'm going to talk about another story that is long in name only and surprisingly short in the time in which we'll be getting to play it, and that is Marathon. We got gameplay footage, information. Folks got hands-on with Bungie's new extraction shooter, Marathon. And it's also coming surprisingly soon. What is it? September? August?
I have it here. September. Alpha in April. April September 23rd. Which is like 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks. Release date, end of September.
September 23rd, the release date. And man, if you've listened to this show for a time, dear listener, you know my love cooling off relationship with Destiny and Destiny 2. Jeff, you and I played through the last narrative campaign of Destiny 2 together. I think when Bungie is cooking, there's nobody that does what they do as well as they do. And hearing the hands-on reports from folks that have already got a chance to, you know, go hands on the sticks with Marathon, it seems like Bungie still has that nailed down. I think it's really interesting what they're bringing to this in the idea of it being an extraction shooter, PvPvE, with kind of the mob enemies that you're able to plink and punk and take down as you're trying to get the loot before you get out, before you get killed by an esports team in training, the actual real people. And I'm very curious how this game fits in the 2025 gaming landscape, because they announced that it is a premium product. It will be a pay product. They, you know, quickly backed away from people saying it's going to be full price. Maybe a $40, maybe a Helldivers 2 kind of price point for Marathon. We don't know yet, but it will be a pay product, not free to play. And there's also reporting on it's going to have, what do they call them? Did they call them seasons?
Yeah, they're season passes and that season kind passes, of battle pass stuff. Yeah.
I thought they called it something else, but I don't see it. But, you know, all of the other things that Destiny has had and other games in this genre have had. But the question is, what's the appetite for it in 2025 of paying to play this multiplayer shooter? And I don't know if we'll have an answer to that until September 24th after the game comes out.
I think this was the big, big coming out party for Marathon, a game that has been in development for a long, long time. They have evidently spent a crazy amount of money in development on this game and much anticipation because it's Bungie. And, I think the game has an interesting visual aesthetic. I think that's kind of a differentiator. But I'm so curious what you think about this, Brian, because this is not my genre. I don't love these competitive first-person shooters. This is not what I tend to gravitate toward. So maybe I'm the wrong person to look at this footage and look at all the stuff that came out about Marathon this week and really have an informed opinion. But from my uninformed position, I don't see much here that differentiates this from half a dozen other games in the marketplace already, other than this one's Bungie.
Mm-hmm. The aesthetic, which you mentioned, but that's the other. It's just,
well, that's what I said. I think it has a really lovely aesthetic, but I don't know if that's enough. I mean, there's a lot of games with, you know, unique, you know, Fragpunks is like, looks nothing like anything else, but it's not a Bungie game, right?
Mm. Yeah. And I think that's really it. Like, they are, I think, pretty inarguably the best feeling shooting mechanics on the market, and they have been ever since Destiny 1. I mean, even dating back to when Halo came out, the Halo Combat Evolved, like that revolutionized how it feels to use a controller and control a person aiming down the sights of a gun.
Right.
And they took it a step further with Destiny and Destiny 2. And it sounds like this is just continuing that great tradition of being the industry leaders in gunplay. And I think that's enough to at least get my foot in the door of being interested. Now, that said, I was just scrolling down to the Game Informer article that covered all of this stuff, and I wanted to look at the comments to see if people were kind of feeling the way I was. And it seems like a lot of them are, where it's like, oh, that's kind of, you know, disappointing. Like, I hope it's good, but like, I was hoping for like a nice, like, single player story from these guys, because, you know, they've done incredible work in that space in the past. Something along those lines. I'm glad they're staying with shooters just because of all the reasons I just mentioned about how great they are at making them. But this is going to be a harder sell for me than Halo ever was. And certainly most of Destiny was for me, because like, extraction shooters, to your point, Jeff, just not my cup of tea. And maybe it's kind of like hero shooters, where it just took the right one for me to be like, okay, this is awesome. Like Overwatch, when it first came out, I was obsessed with that game, and I never liked a hero shooter before then. This might be the extraction shooter that gets me into the genre. I don't know, but it certainly has the best chance to get me into it. But as of now, I'm just kind of like, cautiously excited, tentative maybe, but I always give Bungie the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it is enough that it's Bungie. Maybe that's enough to get people to jump on board with this. It certainly looked pretty cool as these things go, but I just, you know, it feels like it's another one of these, and there's a lot of these. But, you know, I guess that's, if it feels great, I guess that's really what people are looking for. Some interesting tidbits about it. Player progression is not going to be tied to your individual class. It'll be account wide, and you can upgrade things however you like from class to class, which is interesting. There is going to be sort of Destiny like exotics that you'll be able to chase as well. There is going to be these seasons, you know, that you find everywhere nowadays with battle passes and stuff like that. And I guess they're going to reset. So the idea of an extraction shooter, right, is that the stuff that you get is the loot that you are able to survive until the end of the match with. And so that's a big deal, is like, what stuff, I guess inventory space will be at a premium. So you got to decide on the fly in the middle of the match what stuff you're going to try to hang on to and extract with. And so those things will be stuff that you can keep going forward, except at the end of seasons, they're going to wipe all that stuff out, which I think is a pretty controversial choice, because they're looking to literally have a reset every single season for everybody, regardless of whether you're on a battle pass or not. I think at this point, these are the things that differentiate these games. It's the little details. It's exactly how the classes play, all the little abilities and perks that you'll have from class to class. Other than that, I don't really see how much different this is from any other multiplayer shooter that has been, you know, that we've been drowning in lately.
Well, I don't mean the amount of content,
but what?
It's the amount of content, right? Like what? Yeah. How many maps, how many classes? Right now, it doesn't seem like tons are going to launch with the game.
Four different characters: Locust, Blackbird, Glitch, and Void.
When you said Void was impressive.
I think there are six. I think they only showed off four.
Yeah, they only showed four. You're right.
Three maps initially also. And I feel like, again, everything you're saying, Jeff, I totally agree with. The hypocrite in me is, one, I love Bungie stuff, so I'm probably already going to buy it. Two, though, I think you could map all of that over Helldivers too. Like, you know, it's just another cooperative horde mode. We've been doing horde mode since Gears of War. It's the same thing. Oh, horde mode. And
maybe. I think it had more unique things to it than that. But maybe you're right.
And I loved Helldivers 1, and I was still, you know, and then I was down for Helldivers 2 as well. And I think what really pulls me into Marathon, aside from it just being Bungie, the thing that gets me most excited is the look of it. I mean,
yeah,
I think Destiny looks pretty cool. Some of the characters over the years have become a little wonky. I think they really stretch to make the connection to like, oh, we can do fun Fortnite themed events also. We're going to bring these IP in. And it's like, that's not my Warlock. No, thank you. The Marathon looks really slick, kind of this retro futurism. Yeah. It kind of looks like the Ioniq 5. Is that Hyundai's electric car that has like the...
That's a pull.
You know? Just
put that on the box.
I love that car.
Gamers love a Hyundai. You know what I mean?
Hey, the Ioniq 5 is legit. Don't knock
I do like the look of that car, but it's very funny.
Great car. It's retrofuturism built that we can buy today. And that's what I think Marathon... This show is brought... No. I think that's a big part of it, is do you want to look at these characters and in this world? And when... oh my gosh, Sony, you finally did it. You erased it from my brain.
Concord.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Wow, Sony, you almost got me. You almost Men in Blacked me. a big complaint for Concord was the look. Right? People didn't like the characters. People thought the maps were kind of bland. And I think Marathon has the look for days, and apparently they've got that Bungie feel too. So I think if they can get content out quickly enough after this thing launches... My hope it could be a hit, but I don't know. I don't know if they can get that content out because Destiny 1 and 2 struggled with that at times.
Well, we won't have to wait long. As you mentioned, this by the end of the summer, it looks like Marathon will be upon us. Very interesting stuff. All right. My story of the week. We don't have to spend a ton of time on this, but, Christian's here, our resident law expert, and I wanted to talk about the ongoing lawsuit between Ubisoft and players of the crew, a few players of the crew who sued Ubisoft and are angry that the crew got yanked offline. The reason this is my story of the week, when, of course, there are much more interesting things going on in the world and in the world of video games, is because of one little phrase that's buried in the response that the lawyers on behalf of Ubisoft made to a filing from the players, which is so the players were mad that the crew is unplayable now. And whereas, they were told that this game was going to be, you would be able to play with your friends forever because the box said, what's the phrase that it said on the box? I lost it. It said, never play alone or never race alone, whatever, which they interpreted in the halls of justice to mean, never drive alone is on the packaging. They interpreted that as meaning, hey, you can play this game with your friend forever. That's why I purchased it. And that's why I want to sue you for making it impossible for me to play that game because you took the servers down. And in response, Ubisoft's lawyers said, never drive alone is on the packaging, but that statement is a nod to the social nature of the crew and the game's multiplayer function. It amounts to, quote, nothing more than inactionable puffery because it does not describe specific or absolute characteristics of the product. Inactionable puffery, ladies and gentlemen. That's what makes it my story of the week. Fellows, discuss.
Like, is it possible that I just don't like either side in this? Because, like, that is, they're going to, like, dislocate their shoulder going for that reach, the plaintiffs are. At the same time, the argument that Ubisoft's making is like, oh, you're just buying a license. You don't actually own these games. As somebody who has converted to be 100% digital, I know that's true, but at the same time, it is not a great thing to have one of the biggest publishers arguing that in the court, just like setting that precedent. I don't want that to become it's the social media term, normalized doing this. I don't want that to be normalized. I want that to be something that, like, when somebody says something like that, like Ubisoft is saying, we jump all over them, and they, you know, it gets the backlash that that deserves.
I don't disagree with anything you just said. I totally, you know, this whole thing feels like a waste of time. I just feel like these gamers are not going to win. But also, I kind of like the fact that at least somebody is saying, hey, has anybody noticed this is a bad deal for gamers? I hope something comes of it. I suspect nothing will. Christian, as our resident former lawyer, whose words are definitely still actionable and not
whose California and Texas bar licenses are set to inactive, and I cannot and will not give legal advice. Yes, go ahead. What are you going to say,
Jim? Inactionable puffery. They're basically saying to us, oh, don't believe anything we write on the box. We all know that's nonsense. That's absolute hogwash that we put on the box. You're talking about advertising? You want us to, the quotes on the box? We all know that that's nonsense, right? That's basically what they're saying.
I mean, maybe not the most recent, a recent famous example of this, and one we've all probably seen a million times, is Red Bull. Red Bull lost a lawsuit because they said Red Bull gives you wings, WINGS.
Yeah.
And they got sued because
I've been drinking this thing for years. Not a single sprout of a feather on my back.
No wings.
Not
only would you not get physical wings, but you also wouldn't get enhanced performance. And which is the metaphor for how they were trying. I forget the specifics of this, but I think Red Bull at one point said it's clearly a metaphor. And then they were like, yeah, except the metaphor also doesn't apply. Like, yeah, it's just caffeine. You know, you can't, it's like, doesn't turn you into Travis Pastrana as much as you'd like it to. You're not going to come out and jump out of an airplane without a parachute, you know, like you're not going to do it. So they changed it. And now it's, I think, six eyes. So it's so clearly inactionable puffery.
Yes.
That allows it to continue.
By the way, if we weren't already called DLC, I would name this podcast Inactionable Puffery.
See, what I would say is that DLC makes you a better gamer. You listen to this show, you'll become a better gamer. Like, sue us if you become a... Don't
DLC
do that.
Gives you Ferraris.
Look, if Game Informer coming back proves one thing, it's that everyone who subscribes to the print edition will get a Porsche.
That's right.
Look, if I can say one thing on behalf of Brian, it's that Game Informer gives you Porsches. What I find interesting about this, and I have not dug through all of the motions and the filings and blah, blah, blah of this legal case. But when the plaintiffs hung their hat on that line, never drive alone, I would have loved Ubisoft's attorneys to come out and just say, like, and you still can't because you can't play the game. No one can play the game.
You never drive alone.
You're not driving. Your friends ain't driving.
It's either everybody drives or nobody drives.
Nobody drives. Like, just come out. They're already saying that. You know, just say it.
Engage on the puffery battlefield. That's what the battlefield of puffery. That wasn't the only thing that they hung their hats on, though. I do want to point out that they also mentioned that the activation code for in-game currency had an expiration date of 2099, which they said is proof that this game should have been around. It was a guarantee that this game was going to be around and playable until 2099. So this is all puffery.
I honestly I think that the never drive alone is the dumbest thing to try to find actionable puffery through. But I do think the 2099 thing might have been a better avenue to pursue, but I still don't think there's much meat on that bone.
Agreed. And we don't have to talk about it very long.
I do want to point out the Crew 2 is only $30 base price. And then, you know, it's a Ubisoft game, so it probably goes on sale quite often. You probably could have saved yourself a lot of legal fees and just bought the Crew 2 instead of going through this.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
Or you could subscribe to Game Informer and get a Porsche and drive in real.
Those two things are independent of one another, you're saying.
Yeah, I'm not saying Game Informer is going to give you a Porsche. I'm saying you can subscribe to Game Informer and get a Porsche. Like, they're two different transactions.
Game Informers look great in the passenger seat of a Porsche. And you can use that Porsche to go and eventually buy, hopefully, a physical copy of Game Informer at your favorite.
That's why Game Informer says never drive alone, because you should have the magazine in the passenger seat.
How did you know that? We haven't rolled out that tagline yet.
All right. We can move on. That was just anytime I get a chance to say inactionable puffery, I'm going to take it. So there you go. That's my story of the week. All right. We're going to talk about the games we have been playing. But first, we're going to take another break for a sponsor. We'll be right back right after this. This episode of DLC is brought to you by MSI's latest motherboards, the Intel Z890 and the B860 motherboards. Christian, one of the joys that I have as a PC gamer is building my own rig. I really do love it. And it has gotten so easy these days, so simple. Anybody can do it. If you're paying a premium price to have somebody else build your rig, MSI is the solution. MSI is committed to make PC building accessible for everyone, from beginners to seasoned enthusiasts. You can build it yourself. These motherboards come equipped with features that make installation smoother and hassle-free, like the easy debug LEDs, where you can troubleshoot so easy with LEDs that indicate potential issues.
What do I do when I'm yelling at my kids and telling them, Dad needs another hour, I can't figure this out?
Well, I'm sure there's plenty of other things that will confuse and befuddle you. Don't worry.
Don't take this away from me. Yes, I did build it, but no, it hasn't started. No, I don't know what I did wrong. No, well, there's no way to know.
That's the amazing
part. What happens
part
to that?
Is that you still get the thing that looks so cool when it's done, that looks like, wow, that must have been really very difficult. But MSI motherboards have one-hand assembly. You can install your motherboard with ease, thanks to a design that supports single-handed installation and pre-installed I/O shields. In fact, there's no tools necessary. It's a one-finger installation because you don't need a single tool for the M.2 SSD and the PCIe card installations. You can make upgrades quick and hassle-free. Plus, they have a user-friendly BIOS, easy to navigate. It's more intuitive for setup and tuning. Get yourself one of these premium MSI Intel, the Z890 and the B860. Those are designed to support the latest Intel Core Ultra Series 2 processors. They have cutting-edge performance, making them a great choice for gamers who want the highest performing PCs, content creators, professional use, anybody who needs a computer. Now's the time. Upgrade, because we got a special offer. You can save 5% on the Intel Z890 and B860 motherboards at MSI's US store. That's us-store.msi.com with the promo code MSIPOD. MSIPOD. Again, that's 5% off the brand new Intel Z890 and B860 motherboards at the MSI US store. us-store.msi.com and promo code MSIPOD. All right, let's jump into our playlists. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist. All right, Brian, before we get into your actual playlist this week, I know we're a 1 week removed from all of the Nintendo hullabaloo for Switch 2, but you got a chance to actually play a bunch of Switch 2 games, and I'm anxious to get your first person reaction. I know you've written about it and talked about it a lot already, but I'm excited to hear right from you about playing Mario Kart World and Donkey Kong Bonanza and all the other games that you got a chance to get hands on with on Switch 2.
Yeah, so it was the first event that they had out in New York. Literally, the full day was doing Switch 2 activities. So started off at 8 a.m. Eastern time, and which, you know, I'm on Central Time Zone, so I was like 7 a.m. my time, my internal clock. So I was up very early Thank God for coffee and bagel sandwiches in New York, because I don't know if I would have survived that day if not for that pit stop on the way to the venue. But started off with us watching a group viewing of the direct live as it happened, which was fun. There was a moment where they announced that Nintendo Switch 2 Welcome Tour is going to be available as a paid software, and the room erupted in laughter. And I was like, oh, this is kind of awkward. Doug Bowser's like sitting two rows behind me. And but overall, I think the direct was very well received by all the members of the press and some influencers that were there. So, you know, it was a very positive start to the day. And then it only got better because we got to go downstairs and they had multiple rooms, like multiple levels, everything, where it's just like this experience where you start off on Mario. First, it was like display cases on this side and like models that you can pick up and hold and shoot videos with and everything. And then you walk in, it's Mario Kart. You play a little bit of that, walk up the stairs, more Mario Kart. And then it was just kind of like a mini conference floor where it was like so many of the games that were in the direct: Street Fighter 6, Yakuza 0, Cyberpunk, Civ 7, and then of course the big ones like Metroid Prime 4 and Donkey Kong Bonanza, Dragon Drive, Nintendo Switch 2 Welcome Tour, Mario Party Jamboree, the Switch 2 version. So really it was awesome to get to be able to just be there for that entire day. Went until about 6 p.m. and then spend all night writing. But to answer your question in the most roundabout way possible, I loved my time with the Nintendo Switch 2. You know, the system itself feels so much better in your hands. I don't know about you, but like the Switch 1 was always more comfortable than like, say, the PS Vita or the 3DS. Though my hands always kind of cramped a little bit when I was playing those systems.
Yeah.
The Switch, I never really got that, but it was still like, the Joy-Con's still not where I'd want it to be. And then like, if you ever have to, God forbid, you ever have to turn that Joy-Con sideways and play with one single one, what a nightmare. Thankfully, the Switch 2 has the exact same thickness as the Switch 1, but it's so much taller and wider as well. You know, we're up to a 7.9-inch LCD screen, which was a point of concern for me. Because, you know, going from the OLED model of the Nintendo Switch to a LCD model, I was like, okay, well, that's kind of concerning. But then they were like, oh, well, like the capabilities of this thing is incredible. You know, HDR, improved resolution up to 1080p, 120 frames per second. It's like, man, this thing is impressive. And then we even asked them, so we got to do a kind of a press conference with the three guys that were on the Switch 2 Direct. It was like the director of Switch 2, the producer, and like the technical director of Switch 2. So they were just able to ask any questions. And one person did get up and say like, hey, like, you know, why did you go to the LCD instead of an OLED? And they were like, you know, when we put the LCD on the Switch 2, it was about cost effectiveness and we don't want it to be too expensive for the Switch 2. But you got to understand, like, we wouldn't have done this if we didn't have faith in the fact that there have been 8 years of advancements in LCD technology. Basically, like, this is not the Switch 1 LCD that we're just taking and, you know, cutting a bigger chunk of LCD screen and slapping it on the Switch 2. It's like, no, this is the entire system really has been rebuilt from the ground up, so much so that any Switch 1 games that are playing are done so through emulation.
Yeah.
So it is an impressive, even though, like, you know, the sales pitch that you could probably give somebody, the elevator pitch is like, yeah, you know, it's a bigger, more powerful Switch. And right. It's like, okay, well, we could stop there if we wanted to, but that's really discounting what this thing is. Like, it is so much more powerful. So many efficiencies that they learned in making a completely built from the ground up hybrid system instead of, you know, iterating on the Switch 1, just making it like, you know, putting more processing power in it and a better LCD and calling it a day. They probably could have gotten away with that. But this does feel like a substantial upgrade from the Switch 1.
And you holding it, looking at the screen, holding it in your hand, it having, you know, had experience with the OLED Switch 1, it didn't feel like a step backward?
No. I mean, the HDR in particular really makes a game like Mario Kart World just visually pop, right? Like, you, a game like that is so colorful to begin with, but when you factor in HDR and, like, you know, just more vibrancy in the screen, it it feels and it looks really, really great in on that smaller screen. And then obviously it looks amazing when it's up on the big screen with the improved resolution and frame rate. Like Metroid Prime 4, goodness gracious, what an impressive visual showcase. Like I was, I played like I think it was like a 15 minute demo of that. And it's running, there's two modes. There's one that's like, 4K, 60 frames per second, or 1080p, 120 frames per second. And I played the 120 frames per second, and I was astounded by how good this game looks. It starts off with a cutscene where there's like a fight happening at a base, and then Samus swoops down in her ship and blasts away some of the space pirates. Then she lands, and then the fanfare plays as she jumps out of her ship and onto the ground, and then shifts to the first person. It's goosebump inducing. And I, in that moment, I was like, wow, so this is what the game actually looks like. This is by far the best looking Nintendo game that has ever existed. Wow. And it's so good looking. And then like, even things like playing Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom on Switch 2, it is such an improvement. Like it's very easily worth that $10 upgrade that it costs to, if you already own Breath of the Wild or Tears of the Kingdom, to, boost it up to the Switch 2 version. That's not even to take into account the Zelda Notes app, which lets you get like additional lore through voice notes. It gives you, I probably would never use it, but like the GPS navigation with like the voice be like, in 100 feet, turn left.
Find a shrine.
Yeah. They just said you can now like repair your weapons using that app, which is kind of wild because that was like the main complaint that people had about Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom. And then on top of that, you can trade like items with friends. You can send Ultra Hand creations. The Mario Party stuff is so good, like the camera and mouse mini games that I got to play. It's something that I was like obviously going to be excited about a new Nintendo console, but now it's like, okay, I can't wait to get one of those things connected to my TV behind me.
Man, I'm getting hyped just hearing you talk about it. That's really cool. I was a little down on it last week, and I got a lot of people not too happy with me. But I'm open to being blown away by this thing when I see it in person. And hearing somebody who has makes me real excited. Can you talk specifically about the mouse functionality and how that felt?
It felt better than I thought it would. I don't think it's still like quite as good as like a PC mouse, but it, for what it is, it's almost magic in one sense, because you don't have to go into a menu and be like, oh, I want to use mouse controls now. It's like, no, I was playing Metroid Prime. And like the way that works is you have the two Joy-Cons separated if you want to play that way. I'm sure you can also play on like a pro controller and everything, but like the left Joy-Con is kind of like your motion, and then you can push the left trigger and it'll lock on to an enemy. And then you can use the right Joy-Con motion controls to fine tune your aim. And I used that in a boss battle and everything where it was like, okay, he has like these weak points you have to blast while you're shooting him. But at any point, you can just turn that sideways, put it on the table, and suddenly you're using mouse controls. Like no like menu or anything needed. And it was kind of the same for like Civ 7. I got to play a little bit of that, and it was like, all right, the way the guy from Firaxis told me was like, all right, the left Joy-Con is basically going to be your WASD, and your right Joy-Con is, you can use it as a mouse, or you could flip it up and use it like kind of with our pre-existing console controls that we have on like the Xbox, PlayStation, and Switch versions of our game. So at any point, I could just be like, all right, I'm playing with the Joy-Con version, and then flip it, and now it's like mouse and keyboard almost. And that was really impressive. Drag and drive is really novel because like no computers, or most computers, I'm sure there's some out there, nobody has two mice, right? Like, so this is something that you couldn't do otherwise. So the fact that like, you're using the two mice to move the wheelchair forward. And then at any point, again, you can lift your arms up and call for the ball, or like you can be rolling if you have the ball on your lap, and then you just lift your arm up and flick your wrist, and that's how you shoot.
So wild. That's so cool.
And it is interesting because you can use it on the desk, which is the main setup. And then I tried it on my jeans, and that worked as well. So like that's perfect for me, because if people who are watching the video of this on the Patreon, you can see behind me, I have no desk or no table in front of my couch. So
just a stack of jeans.
Just a stack of jeans, which, thank God it works on jeans. But no, it worked remarkably well on my legs.
Yeah.
And it was just fantastic. I wish I would have had a chance to try out the game chat functionality, but I think it was just too loud of an environment. So I did get an extended demo of it, but I didn't get to actually try it out.
Here, as a left-handed person, I'm really hoping they give us full customization on the mousey, which hand is the mouse and which hand is the stick controller.
I feel like they would.
I've learned not to assume as a left-handed
fair
person.
Enough.
But yeah, I would hope so too. But man, that's awesome. Okay, so Mario Kart World. Let's give me the you know, the 500-foot view of that. It feels like a real evolution to the franchise and looks like a ton of fun. What was your impression?
So this entire console generation, ever since Mario Kart 8 Deluxe came out and Super Smash Bros. Ultimate came out, I have consistently pitched to various guests on my All Things Nintendo podcast, where the heck does Nintendo go from here with either of these franchises? Like, how could they do something that doesn't feel like a step back? And Mario Kart, I was particularly concerned about because, like, they put out that booster course pass and doubling the number of courses in that game that already had a ton of tracks.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, well, they've really, like, painted themselves into a corner. Like, what do they do? Just release, like, Mario Kart 8 Ultra. Now we've got another 96 courses coming. It's like, no, they're probably not going to do that. So I think that they figured it out with Mario Kart. I still don't know what the answer is for Smash Brothers, but for Mario Kart, I think they figured it out. Like, the courses feel like more ambitious than ever before. Like, you know, I played some, like, almost, I guess it must have been like a Bowser's Castle style level. And like, you're driving up on walls, you're like jumping off and landing on rails and grinding. And it just feels like, you know, okay, this does feel like the next evolution of Mario Kart. There's 24 characters at the starting line, which in those first moments feels like pure chaos. I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to like this. And then you know, it slowly, you space out and it feels like Mario Kart again, very quickly. But I kind of like, in retrospect, those chaotic moments right off the starting line, because everybody's jockeying for position. So that feels like a next evolution. Then there's the open world area, where you're going around and you are, you know, you're able to explore these. I don't even know like how in-depth the exploration is, how rewarding it is. But all I know is the Mario Kart team is so creative with how they make their games that I'm excited to see what they can do with like an open world exploration element added into this mix.
Yeah.
Like I was driving around to an open field while I was waiting for one of our matches to start, because they had to gather 24 players. And, you know, I found like these bouncy flowers and I'm like jumping off of them. I'm like, what can I do with these? There has to be a reason for these. Didn't figure it out. I kept driving and I fell down to like a ravine. The car automatically starts floating and like almost like a boat driving around. I found a star down there. So I'm like driving around super fast. There's stacks of coins. I don't know if that means that you're going to be able to like collect those and like maybe buy cosmetics or something like you could in 8. Lots going on. The when the items hit you, it feels more physics-based. It doesn't feel like a canned animation. Like if you get hit by a blue shell, you don't just like pop up and spin up in the air. Like I got hit by a red shell while I was driving. I kind of like rolled a couple of times and then I got hit by a blue shell and I rolled like a bunch more times, but it felt like it was momentum. It wasn't like just like this animation that happened every single time I got hit that like, oh, that's the exact same animation again. It felt like it was actually taking into account my directionality, my momentum, the item's direction it was coming from. It felt like all that stuff was being factored in. I could be wrong, but that's what it felt like in like the few events that I played. And then, so I played a little bit of Grand Prix, a little bit of Free Roam, and then Knockout Tour mode, which is kind of just like an elimination mode where like, all right, you got to be below this number to survive this checkpoint. Then you got to be below this number and just keep going until the best player is crowned. I got Mario Karted so hard in that mode. I was all the way in the front. And I, you know, did an amazing job with that. I was feeling myself with this race. And then I see the second checkpoint. I already passed the first checkpoint, survived that elimination, and suddenly blue shell. Then suddenly I'm like, okay, well, that's all right. Sorry, I'm still like in the range that I need to be to survive this checkpoint. Then red shell, then bullet bill, then red shell. And I'm like, oh my God, I got 13th and the cutoff was 12. So I was eliminated. But I mean, that's Mario Kart, though. And that, right. I'm glad to see that that was intact, because it would have felt weird if, like, you know, that didn't happen.
Right. Ah, man, it's so much to be excited about. I'm super jealous that you got hands on with all that stuff and you came away so jazzed. It really does make June 4th you know, seems so much farther away. But
fifth.
Go ahead. Were you gonna say something, Christian?
June 5th.
I said, I keep doing that. I don't know why I have fourth in my head. Midnight on the fourth, I'm hoping. I don't know. Donkey Kong Bonanza, did you get a chance to play that?
I did. It feels like, what if we put Donkey Kong in a Mario Odyssey style game?
Yeah.
I mean, it had to have been developed at least in part by the Odyssey team. Like, that's just my key takeaway, is the vibe of it, the controls of it, everything feels like, the structure of it feels like Mario Odyssey, except Donkey Kong, instead of being able to capture stuff, there's four face buttons, right? One of them is jump. The others are punch and in different directions, because all the environment is completely destructible.
Right.
So the top face button, X, is punch up. Y is punch straight. B is punch down. So literally you can like just explore by punching through the environment most of the time. There's also enemies that you got to like grab a chunk of rock out of the ground and throw it at them. And then like you can roll like Donkey Kong can in Donkey Kong Country. And if you're carrying a chunk of rock and you try to roll, he takes the rock and spins it on the ground and surfs on it. And like, it's like a mode of transportation. It's extremely exciting to see, again, how creative they can get. Because I found like I completed this NPC's quest, and they're like, oh, you can go down to this new layer of the level. So like suddenly I was like dropping down into this hole, landing on this entirely different level of this map.
Wow.
And then it was like, oh, but that's not included in the demo. So it teleported me back to like the main level. And I'm like, oh, I wonder what they're hiding there. So yeah, it's extremely intriguing. Donkey Kong, I know people were upset that they like redesigned his character model. I was maybe slightly concerned they redesigned his character model for Mario Kart World when they did the Switch 1 or Switch 2 first reveal. But now I think he looks incredible, and he's so animated and expressive. And I think that the new character model, as much as I love old DK, I think he looks fantastic.
Lot to be excited about, Christian, for Switch 2.
Yeah, it's almost like I told you.
Well, we had a spirited discussion.
Yeah, you know, no, I'm stoked. I mean, I think there's a good chance. I mean, three games I haven't played yet are going to be on my top five favorite of the year at the end of the year. It's like all of a sudden, this us doing only five games is even
all
harder.
Of a sudden? It's been like that for 10 years.
I just meant this year, this particular year again.
Yeah,
there's going to be
like I have that problem every year. All right, so closing the book on Nintendo Switch 2. I appreciate you giving us your take on all of that really, really cool event. But what else is on your playlist, Brian?
So I've been dabbling in a lot. I have not. I mean, there's a few things that I've been playing more than others. I've been taking tours of games that aren't out yet that I can't talk about. But like, I made a resolution a couple of years ago that, like, you know, when I was a kid, I loved the N64 pro wrestling games. And I was, to be fair, I was a lot more into pro wrestling back then than I am now. I have not watched a pro wrestling thing aside from this past Royal Rumble in probably 6 or 7 years. It's been a long time since I've seen anything pro wrestling. I just have a lot of friends who happen to be close to it. And every once in a while, I'll get into a conversation, or I'll be at GameInformer.com, and our wrestling expert, Marcus Stewart, will be like, oh, this year's so good. And I have said, like, I had a great time with those, like, WCW versus NWO Revenge back on N64. And I've always thought, like, I wonder if I would still like those, even though I'm not the biggest wrestling fan anymore. So I have started playing a little bit of WWE 2K25. I am still flailing at just trying to tread water, because the controls are so much more intricate. I feel like my dad, who stopped playing video games after SNES, and then he got a PS4 right before COVID, and he's like, yeah, I'm playing Uncharted and God of War 2018. And I'm like, oh God, like, your last game that you played was like Donkey Kong Country. So the levels of complexity is I'm trying to teach him how to play Overwatch and how to use two analog sticks. That's how I feel trying to know all of the terminology that I, you know, either erased from my brain or has like emerged into the mainstream wrestling consciousness playing WWE 2K25. So I am still learning slowly but surely, but it seems fun. That's all I had to say about that. I mean, I'm trying my best.
Probably 40 of the roster are you just like, who are these people?
Oh yeah. I mean, that was me when I went to a Royal Rumble party at Giant Bomb Dan Reichert's house. And he's like he has to lean over and explain, oh, this person is this and this person is that. I'm like, okay, I really appreciate that. I've chosen the right person to watch this with. That's awesome. But the games I've been playing more of are Assassin's Creed Shadows and MLB The Show 25, which I have fallen absolutely in love with. It is the most captivated by a sports game that I've been in a long time. Like, I've played Madden each year it comes out, and I dabble in all the NBA 2K games, but MLB The Show, I feel like, is the most consistently excellent sports franchise that has an annualized calendar release. And I think this year is one of the best they've done in a while. You know, the long form modes are terrific. They have the storylines, which highlights the Negro Leagues. And this is the third year they've done it. So they're really starting to like dig into some players in this extremely underrepresented portion of the game's history. And, you know, at the first year, it was like, OK, well, Jackie Robinson. Yeah, I know his story. It's cool to learn some like factoids. But now we're digging into ones that like players that I have not really been familiar with, even though I was huge into baseball most of my life. And it's really awesome to learn their past and like, you know, have voices of authority speaking on these players and sharing this history that I'm, you know, unfortunately unfamiliar with in a lot of parts. But the gameplay itself is phenomenal as well. The franchise mode is fun. The road to the show where you're taking your single player and bringing him from college to the minor leagues to the MLB. That's a blast. It's RPG style progression. So I'm having a really great time with that. And I keep going back to it, even though I've done my review on Game Informer, and it's very rare that I will review a game and keep playing it. And this is one of those cases. And Assassin's Creed Shadows, I feel like relatively early, being only about 8 or 9 hours deep, because this game seems like it is impossibly huge, and I don't know how I'm ever going to finish it. But hey, I almost 100%ed Odyssey, so I guess there's a chance.
Yeah, that's me too. Odyssey, I put over 100 hours into. I'm still playing Shadows as well, and you know, I barely feel like I'm scratching the surface. The thing that's very rude is that new games keep coming out.
Oh my god!
I'm trying to finish these like 100 hour games. It's just not fair. But
many big games.
Yeah. Awesome. Very, very cool playlist. We got more playlists coming up. We're going to take another break for a sponsor and be back with Christian telling you what he's been playing right after this. This episode of DLC is brought to you by Opera GX. Most web browsers are built for everyone, which means they're built for everyone, not built for you. They're generic, like vanilla ice cream. And, you know, let's be honest, a little boring. But you know what? You're not boring. No, you want a browser that is as cool and fun and into games as you are. Opera GX is a browser that's into gaming, Christian.
But it's kind of, you know, you probably maybe checked it out already and not much has changed and it's the same thing it's been. And Opera GX is just kind of like, you know, you've been there, done that, right? Like nothing.
Oh, no. What? Guess what? The Opera GX has gotten a facelift, baby. Now
you're speaking my language, baby.
Oh, no. Let me tell you. We've got updated mods. There's a new mod interface that makes browsing your mods, finding new ones easy. You can mod your entire browser to have it be exactly as you want. They've got the new sidebar transparency, which provides a more immersive experience for wallpaper, and the new and improved GX Corner, which is my favorite feature because it serves as your gaming hub right inside the browser. It keeps you caught up on everything from hot deals to the latest gaming news. This is literally the only web browser I've ever heard of that's aimed at gamers, which is why you're hearing about it
on DLC.
And look, you can also have custom sounds for opening and closing tabs, keyboard sounds, background music. And I'm not saying that you should make it tab closed, but you could.
You could.
Tab open if you wanted to. You know, I'm just going to throw that out there.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Customize it. Make it yours.
This isn't just about the visuals either. This isn't just a pretty face on Opera GX. It also has the stuff you want under the hood. Because if you're gaming and, like me, can't be bothered to close your web browser while you load up a video game, well, guess what? GX Control lets you limit how much CPU and RAM Opera GX can use, so you can avoid lag and frame drops while keeping your favorite tabs and music running in the background. It's really, they thought of everything for folks like us. Get a browser that's literally better at everything. OperaGX.gg/DLC. That's where you go to download it. OperaGX.gg/DLC. Thanks again to Opera GX for sponsoring this episode. And use our link in the show notes to download Opera GX today. That's OperaGX.gg/DLC. Christian Spicer, what is on your playlist?
I teased it on our Wednesday show for patrons that listen to paid DLC, but the game I want to bring to the show today is South of Midnight. It's kind of, if you've heard about it, finally got my hands on it. And I'll start short and sweet. I don't love it, unfortunately.
Oh, no.
I will talk about the things I like, and then I will talk about the reasons why I don't particularly love it, but not to bury the lead. I don't want to say it's not very good. I think it's excellent. I don't think it's very fun. I don't enjoy my time playing the game. And so with that said, backing up, I think what it does right is the look. I am playing on my NVIDIA provided 5080. I mean, just gorgeous. Everything maxed, as far maxed as it can be, and just stunning. You know, absolutely stunning in terms of raw graphics, but also I think more importantly, art direction. Just exquisite art direction. The character designs, the enemy designs, the world, the environments, absolutely beautiful. There are little things that when you get into it that you kind of notice where, like, it doesn't have the leaves and the bushes don't get out of your way as you walk through them, that you see in some of the bigger AAA games nowadays. We talked about how, you know, when you walk through snow in games and how fun that is to see, like in Assassin's Creed Shadows, when you're dragging a body through the snow and stuff like that. South of Midnight doesn't have some of those flourishes, but I think the stuff it does have, it does really, really well. The music, the score, the voice acting is all top notch, top quality, really, really pulls you into the game. And I have not finished it. Nor will I, just being realistic with myself and in the audience. But from what I've played of it, the story is also excellent and compelling. And the setting and the protagonist and the story is all stuff that isn't featured enough in games. I think I would love South of Midnight as a Netflix show, you know, as a Devil May Cry or one of their adaptations, but with this presentation. I love all of that stuff. But when my hands are on the controller, fingers on, thumbs on sticks, I find that its traversal, its platforming, and its combat are all subpar compared to other games in the genre. And if folks listening to the show know when we talked about the previews for it and they showed the first trailers, I mean, this game felt like it was catnip for me. You know, I love Devil May Cry, Bayonetta, closed combat arenas, sign me up, you know, like air combos, juggles, all of that stuff I'm super into. And South of Midnight, I think, suffers in terms of how it doles out its upgrades and also in terms of it just its raw combat. There is something, and I haven't, you know, recorded my gameplay and tried to do frame counts, but something I think missing in the standard 5-button attack combo that just, it feels the opposite of what we were talking about with Bungie. It's just not quite there. And the same with the traversal on camera or in the trailer. I think it looks really cool. You got a double jump, a glide, a dash, a little hang glider, all that stuff. And then doing it in my opinion, it feels very rote. It feels like, oh, you're going to do these things because you, that's what you need to do to get to the next platform. But there's not the creativity or joy in the exploration or figuring out or pulling off an incredible platforming maneuver with those same techniques as you would in Split Fiction. And the last thing, I feel bad dragging this game because, I really like what it presents in the story and the narrative and the artistic direction. But I also think another reason I don't love it is it does two things that I think frustrate me and a lot of other folks as well. And that is your character is constantly saying what's happening, talking about what's happening, talking to themselves as they do things. Oh, you know, this is a big cabin. I'm afraid it's going to happen in this cabin. Now let's try to go in the cabin. Look at us. We're going in the cabin. And it's like, I know I'm going in the cabin. I'm, you know, show, don't tell. And then lastly, especially the first maybe 2 hours, maybe even longer than that, you're constantly getting interrupted with the tutorial boxes. And so many of the tutorial boxes are just the most basic thing. Like, to jump down, push down and jump. Like it's your first third person action game. And it, in my opinion, really messes up the pacing of this game and interrupts the story from being compelling. So while I wanted to love South of Midnight, ultimately, I think it's a pass. And if you think it looks beautiful, I'd probably recommend watching somebody's no commentary let's play, because the best parts about the game are when your hands aren't on the controller, in my opinion.
Well, I feel like you and I swap places with this game because I've been playing it a bit as well, although my life is owned by another game right now that I'll get to shortly. But I feel like you're the guy who's usually like, all I care about is the story and deliver me a great story and tell me the amazing story and everything else can be forgiven. And I'm usually the guy who's harping on the nits of, you know, you got to make the moment to moment compelling. And I feel like there are certain games where it doesn't matter how banal what I'm doing is, because where I'm doing it and what it means that because I'm doing it is so amazing. And I think there's that pejorative term that people will throw around, walking simulator, right? I think a lot of, not that I heard anybody mention this game as such, but that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. Is sometimes there are games that you would say, oh, you know, what you're doing on the sticks, a game's like Gone Home, right? What you're doing on the sticks is not interesting. And I would say, yeah, but that's not what the game is about. Now, this one does have third-person action combat, which I think is perfectly serviceable. Is it top tier? No. Am I going to this game because of the combat? No. But is the combat a fun distraction, a certain punctuation between other things that are happening? Yes. And I think it's perfectly serviceable that way. And I think some of the enemies are fun to fight, and there's certain cool things that you get, you know, upgrades that you get that you can do that make it, you have more decision making in that moment, in that moment to moment of the combat, that make it more than just rote for me. But all that doesn't matter, because all of the things that you praised it for, I think elevate it to such a high place. Like, you've never played a game that looks like this, and you've never been in an environment like this with NPCs that behave like this, that talk like this, that it's just such a singular experience. And you praise the visuals. I'll go even farther and say, if you are lucky enough to have an HDR television or monitor to play this on, this is the HDR showcase. Wow. Brian was talking about how great HDR looked on Switch 2. I agree. I think HDR is a more impactful toggle than 4K, for example.
I think, yeah, I made that exact point on my podcast, I think 2 weeks ago, talking about, like, you know, so you and I are in complete agreement there.
Yeah, I think we don't talk about HDR enough, I think, just sort of as an industry, about how big a deal, because people, you know, oftentimes you have to, like, manually turn it on Your monitor, my monitor, I don't stay in HDR mode on my computer monitor all the time because it would just blow my eyeballs out just like editing a Google Doc. You know, I don't need it to be 4,000 nits of whiteness, you know? I don't need that or whatever it is. So I leave it off. I have to manually turn it on. I've learned the Windows 11 shortcut. You know, it's Windows key Alt B to turn on the HDR mode. I think a lot of people ignore HDR. Maybe I have the wrong perception of that, but I think a lot of people do ignore HDR. This is a game where the HDR is absolutely stunning. And it's a showcase. It's like, do you have an HDR television? Do you want to show it off? Put on South of Midnight, because there are just the vibrancy of the color and the way it handles lights and darks and sunsets and sunrises and light peeking through foliage and just the art direction is incredible. Now, that said, the game opens with a little like intro video cinematic that is actual stop motion. And I was like, oh my God, is this the game? Is this how the game's going to look? And it isn't, which is a bummer because that would be amazing. How the game does look is still amazing, but it doesn't actually look like stop motion, which is what I, for a moment, thought I was going to get, was like, oh my God, this is actual. It looks like a Wallace and Gromit or a Leica, you know, thing. But no, they do the sort of animating on the twos, but only in certain things like lip syncing and facial animation. But the game itself doesn't look like it stutters, or it doesn't look like you're dropping frames. You know, your video card isn't up to the task and it's dropping frames. None of that is it doesn't even look like Into the Spider-Verse, really. It has its own kind of unique take where they were very judicial in how they used that effect, which makes it not look like stop motion to me. It still looks cool and interesting and different, but it doesn't actually look like stop motion in the way that opening cinematic really does. That said, I just am so taken by this world and the people in it. And like you said, Christian, the voice acting is excellent. And at no point do I not want to be hanging around these people and the like wild fantasy characters that you meet and interact with. And it's just a mythology that has never been mined before, to my knowledge, in a video game. Mm-hmm. So it's just so new and so unique and so different and offers so much richness in just moving through that world that even if the sort of mechanical combat is, you know, it feels like a throwback to a, you know, PS2 era, PS1 era, I don't have a problem with that because everything else is so much more interesting than what you could possibly have gotten other places. I really disagree with you. I don't think it's held back by its shortcomings as much as you do personally.
Yeah. I don't disagree with anything you said, except I don't think anything about it being a video game makes it better. I think Gone Home as a video game is made better because you are the one there doing those things and experiencing them. And I think South of Midnight would hit just as hard as if it were Into the Spider-Verse, you know, like if it were this beautiful movie. And I don't think it's a PS2 era. I don't think the combat is retro in its presentation. I think it's off. I think it's like, again, you know, feeling this-esque. I think it's missing all of those key things that we often talk about what makes a great game feel good. It's just not quite there. Like, in minor spoiler, the first real boss, when you're fighting Two-Toed Tom, there is just a basicness to the telegraphing of his first the chomp, and like the screen goes red and you have your dash, but your dash is, you know, frame delayed by half a second and maybe one slight pace too short that makes that difficult, not in that you don't know what to do, but in how the game presents itself. And you literally can't attack him during those moments. You're just stuck waiting for this thing to happen. Then he kicks the bell up, then you go get the bell, then you get the weak spot. And it's just this like choppiness, which I hate to use because it's not the stop motion effect problem, but just it feels like it wasn't quite polished all the way, in my opinion. And so I agree with you. I love the world. I love the environment. I love being there. But I guess what matters for me is this better because it's a video game? And in my opinion, it's not better because it's a video game than if it were another type of fiction that I could be experiencing.
Well, my only retort to that is that I get to wander around in that world. I get to wander. Kinda. I get to see how the light plays. There's no director who has, you know, decided to cut away from that shot before I'm done marveling at how the sunrise rises over the swamp, right? I get to wander around. I get to be in that world. And to me, that is magical. To me, that is, yes, there's not a ton of exploration. There's, you know, you can go on these little side paths and get little power-ups that let you, you know, get your new skills quicker or whatever. But not power-ups, I should say currency. But, you know, there's not a ton of exploration, but just like living in that world and being in that world and wandering around in it and marveling at how beautiful it is and how much detail it is and what's this little piece of it, to me, does make it better than just watching it as a movie would. But I think you come from a valid position, and I can't disagree with some of the points you're making. I just don't think that the negatives landed as hard to me as they did for you.
Yeah, it's on Game Pass.
It's on Game Pass.
Feel like a dismissive throwaway, but like it's on Game Pass and it's beautiful. So
yeah, honestly, if you have you know, a beefy GP, or if you have HDR television and an Xbox, you owe it to yourself to turn the HDR on and see how beautiful this game is. It's just it looks like a painting to me. It doesn't look like a stop motion thing. It looks like a storybook come to life in the most gorgeous way.
And not that this excuses it, but based on, I believe, the review on GameInformer.com, from what I understand, one of the reviewer's biggest complaints, I believe it was Charles Hart who reviewed it for us, he said that, you know, the combat gets so good at the end, it makes me mad that it didn't get better earlier.
Interesting.
And well, again, not that that excuses it, because like I'm not the biggest fan of when they make the argument, oh, you just got to get through the first 30 hours, then it gets great. Yeah. Like, yeah. I'll give like Final Fantasy 13 15 hours, and then it eventually does get great, and it's like, okay, this feels better than I was feeling before. But once it's like, okay, well, yeah, once you get to the end of the game, it really is awesome. It's like, all right, I'm not going to do that. But yeah. I do need to try this game, because it's been something that I've been extremely intrigued by for, you know, as long as I've known about it.
Yeah. The other thing I want to mention before we move on is, Christian, you talked about the tutorial thing and how some of the combat feels simplistic or unsophisticated in some way. And part of me, this is a gripe that I have in that part of me was like, you know, I think there may be a design decision to make this game accessible to people that don't usually come to video games, don't usually play video games. Mm. Which I think is cool, but my gripe is that then it's got like F-bombs all over, you know, all over it. And it's like, I feel like those aren't in a handshake with one another, right? I get you're making a very specific thing about a very specific time and place, and maybe that time and place needs to have language like that for you to make it feel authentic or whatever. But I also feel like this feels like a storybook game. It feels like a game that could be a gateway for folks that maybe don't feel like video games are made for them. And, you know, and I think gameplay wise, it feels like, you know, it's open to folks that, like you were talking about, Brian, with your dad, you know, that maybe aren't, you know, steeped in years and years of training of how to play a third person action game. And then it's like, well, we got to be a certain age. You got to be a certain age to, you know, to play, which is like, ugh, I wish it wasn't like that. But anyway, that's my own bugaboo. All right. That's South of Midnight. I think if you have Game Pass, you should check it out regardless. All right. The game that has stolen my life, and, you know, this was entirely predictable, is Blueprints, as, you know, the pun suggests.
This is a game I talked about, like two Steam Next Fests ago.
I mean, it was probably the last one, but it feels like it was 4,000 games ago.
I'm pretty sure it wasn't the last one. I think it was two times.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Ago,
I think you're right.
I could be wrong.
No, I think you're right.
I knew from the moment I played the demo, like, this was a game that I was going to absolutely love. The thing I did not anticipate was, like, how big of a deal it was going to turn out to be. I think this is going to be the indie game of 2025, based on just the amount of fervor that people have for it. And I think justifiably so. You know, the immediate references that people bring up are, you know, Obra Dinn and, you know, even stuff like Myst and Riven, for old people like me. Oh, what's the other one?
The Witness.
The Witness, yes. I mean, a game that I was hooked on. But there's an even more recent one. Curse of the Golden Idol. You know, these like puzzle games, or even a Her Story. These puzzle games where, you know, they really respect the player, and you're going to have to take some notes. You're going to have to hunker down. You're going to really have to think. That's what Blueprints is. But it's what's so magical for me personally is, it's inside this like board game conceit. It plays like a modern designer board game in a lot of ways, borrows a lot of mechanics from that. And I think just brilliantly so. So if you didn't hear me talk about Blueprints, you know, when I played the demo and I was like raving about just the demo, the idea here is this is a puzzle roguelike in that you're going to be replaying the same day over and over again, just like you do in a Hades or a Dead Cells or what have you. But here, you know, instead of action and upgrades, you're going to be figuring out stuff. And what you're figuring out is you are the, I think, nephew or grandson. I don't even remember. So much. Whatever. My brain is full of other things in this game. But you are, you know, a relative of a guy who has passed away and has this giant mansion and says, hey, there's 45 rooms in this. Actually, there's 46. Nobody has found the 46th. The only way you will get your inheritance is if you discover the 46th room. And the way you do that is you move through this this mansion, this enormous building. And every time you go through a door, you draft one of three rooms. And they come in tiles, like if you're playing a modern board game like Betrayal on House on the Hill or many, many other games. Castles of Mad King von Ludwig. There's a lot of board games that use that tile laying mechanic. So the idea is that you're laying a tile in this grid of potential locations of tiles. And so you have to think about how you're laying them because they have certain number of entrances and exits on the tile. And you want to make it so that you don't limit yourself. You don't close yourself off and make it so you can't, you have to go through a door to add a new tile. And if you mislay tiles or get into a situation where you can't lay a tile that has a new place to add a new tile, then you have to start over and in a roguelite way, start the day over again. It wipes away all the tiles and you have to start again. There are currencies that you will acquire in the various rooms that let you open the doors. For example, keys, certain doors are locked. There are a number of steps that you can take. Every time you enter a new room, it depletes your total steps. If you get to zero steps, you are tired. You have to go to sleep. You wake up the new day, start all over like a roguelite. So there's rooms that give you more steps. There's rooms that take away a lot of steps. Like if you go into the gymnasium, it takes extra steps away from you. And then there are other currencies as well. There's certain rooms that are special that require gems to lay the tile, et cetera, et cetera. So a part of how you choose the rooms is maximizing your currencies and using your currencies. And there is some RNG frustration in this game. There is some stuff that you couldn't possibly have foreseen, that the selection of tiles that come up, or the resources that are actually going to be available. Just, you got unlucky, your run's going to end. And there is some frustration from that, but man, the game mitigates that in such clever ways. I am blown away by the design of this game. Evidently, it was in design, this single person designer, for 8 years. They've been working on Blueprints.
And it really shows because the game has an incredible amount of polish. And the puzzles, as they just reveal themselves to you, there are certain rooms that are puzzle rooms that are just an overt puzzle. You walk in, you understand it's a puzzle. And then there are these sort of secondary and other layered puzzles where you don't even realize you're looking at a puzzle. You don't even realize the clues you've been given that sort of in the best possible way emerge. And that is the magic of Blueprints. That is the sort of irresistible, I got to just try one more run. Because what's so great about this game and what makes it to me more compelling than, for example, an Obra Dinn, is that you're not just doing the puzzles. That sort of board game layer of what you're doing moment to moment, of just laying the tiles, choosing the tiles, trying to maximize your currencies, all that stuff, is it almost obfuscates the challenge that the game is presenting to you. Because it's giving you something to do moment to moment. So all those moments where in something like a Myst, like if you've ever played Myst or games like that, that are literally just puzzles, like just figure it out, and you get stuck and you're like, man, I feel like I'm at a dead end almost, and I'm beating my head against the wall. The cool thing about Blueprints is that you're doing something else at the same time. So it never feels like, oh, I'm just working on this puzzle. I just am staring at a door that I can't get open, and I don't know why I can't get it open, and I don't know what. There's another game you're playing at the same time. And that, I can't express how much that like eases the beat your head against the wall, because you're never going to get all the same rooms every run. So you're always dealing with a different sort of series of things. And then there's things that present themselves to you as like, oh my gosh, I think I figured something out. I think this thing that I discovered over here references a room. So I'm hoping I get that room. But if I don't, there's other things to be thinking about. And there's other things to be worried about and working on. And just like the number of different angles at which you can be working on problems in this game is just makes it fun. It makes it mitigates the puzzle game problem, which is, you know, and honestly, like Witness had that to a certain extent, right? Is it always felt like there was something else to be working on in the Witness. You know, there were certain times when you're like, well, I can't get any farther. But then there's like, oh, well, did I look up in the sky and notice there's a puzzle in the sky? You know, that kind of thing is taking place in Blueprints as well. But it always has this sort of basic board game rule set layer that is always just fun. And there's so much brilliant in this game. There's so much brilliant. There's items that you will find that will like let you break certain rules. And there are things that relate to each other that you can sort of like alley-oop to yourself and set up like, oh, this is a setup for the next run, or like two runs from now, I'm setting up this really cool thing to happen. And it's like the level of, you know, constant, oh my God, I've been walking past this 400 times and I didn't realize that they were telling me something, is so rad. It's like a different, you know, it's got that I feel brilliant thing that we all know from like a portal, you know, where it's like, ah, I'm the only person that figured this out. It's got that pat yourself on the back, I'm a genius for figuring out the puzzle thing, but it's also got the, I didn't even know I was looking at a puzzle until I've got this new piece of information. And oh my gosh, look what was staring at me the whole time. So it is not, you know, it is not a game that you can sort of casually play. You really do, you know, the game says take notes, pay attention. You know, you have to really engage with it, but also it's just fun laying tiles and building your house and figure, you know, trying to not get into a position where you are dead ended or you've run out of steps or you don't have any keys, or which is going to happen. It happens all the time, but like the game of trying to
maximize each run is in itself fun, over and above the like meta layer of figure it all out fun. I think this game is a triumph, and it really is going to, you know, I have not finished it. I'm told that even after you do finish it, there's new stuff that is unveiled. I can't wait. I'm having a great time playing Blueprints. And
is it out on everything or just?
No, it's
out on Steam. And okay. I'm playing
it's on Game Pass. It's on PlayStation Plus. Like, there's just every...
Oh, that's great.
It's up there with South of Midnight of like, okay, I have Game Pass. I'm going to download both of these tonight and then play them at some point this week.
Yeah. I couldn't recommend this one higher. It is it really is something special. I think it's going to go down as one of those like great all-time puzzle games. I think the aesthetic is gorgeous. It's a really simple, beautiful, like clean lines design. And then, you know, there's just so many cool moments. There's so many cool reveals and things that you're just like, oh, I did not. This is the Yeah. So I am hooked on Blueprints. It is one of those ones where, you know, I'm literally taking my phone out and taking pictures of my screen. Because I want to have it, you know, it's
picture of my son's birthday, picture of Blueprint Room 2, Blueprint Room 4, Blueprint Room 5.
Yeah. Yeah. Really special game, Blueprints. All right. Last thing I want to talk about is Rematch. We talked about it in the Triple I initiative presentation. Rematch, the new game from the Sifu developers that are sort of leveraging the, you know, sort of dynamic body movement that they developed for Sifu of you know, linking martial arts moves one to the other, but then leveraging that and putting it into soccer or football, which I think is brilliant. And Rematch really does feel to me like what's the car game where you're basically playing soccer?
Rocket League.
Rocket League, right? It's everybody knows how fun Rocket League is, right?
What if we took that? You know that sport where you play, you hit this ball in with cars? What if we made that with people?
Like the actual sport. I know.
I'm talking about you take the car sport and you make it with people, Jeff.
Yeah, yeah, no. You're right. I'm sure not the only one, but I always described Rocket League as like, what if you were just the foot? In soccer, what if you played soccer but you were only a foot? This is, you know, you're actually playing soccer, and so I think Rematch is really cool. I played in this sort of closed beta experience weekend preview thing, and this is a multiplayer only game, so you are going to be playing with other human beings if you're playing Rematch. There's either, as it stands now, or at least the version of the game I played, there's 4v4 or 5v5. And you play soccer. You're doing it in really cool sort of pastel environments where, you know, you could be in the shadow of a giant mountain or like waterfalls or in the desert. So it's kind of fantastical, but it's just prettying up what is ostensibly the same soccer field every single time. And the cool thing about it is you don't sign up to play a specific position. Every time someone scores a goal, it rotates the position you start in. So somebody scores a goal, there's a celebration animation, the team that scores, yay, yay, yay. And then it like fades to black, you come back up, and you're all of a sudden standing in a different position.
So sometimes you might have schoolyard volleyball.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, sometimes like every match, I'm probably going to play goalkeeper at some point. Every match, I'm probably going to play forward. Every match, I'm probably going to play, you know, back defense. I'm going to be rotating around the pitch, and when you're four, you know, 4v4 and 5v5, very different, right? And the game encourages team play and cooperation in really smart ways, and it's got a lot of actual. I think the skill ceiling for this game is super high because you can the way you interact with the ball is very cool. You run slower when you're kicking the ball than you do without it, so defenders are faster than whoever is the ball handler at any given moment. But as the ball handler, you are able to kick the ball out in front of you just like a real human would, and so run faster. So you can. do these really cool things where you can kick the ball up in the air and run, or kick the ball past somebody and run around them to then get it to yourself. And then, you know, obviously lots of passing and shooting is happening. And the biggest innovation here is there's no out of bounds. There's no penalties. There's no stoppage of play ever, right? It's Rocket League. It's we're going until somebody scores. And I've been in games where, you know, the score is really high. I've been in games where it's just keep away for a long time and nobody's scoring. It's super fun to play as the goalkeeper. It's super fun to play any other position. You know, you have a boost meter that you can use to do cool things. I feel like I got better as I played it. I mean, I only played it for a couple of hours. It was a, like I said, just a weekend event. I didn't spend a ton of time with the game, but even in the, like, I don't know, dozen, 15, 20 matches I played, I don't know how many I played. It was quite a few because I kept going back. I was like, this is great. And I was just playing quick match over and over. And I played 4v4. I played 5v5. I preferred the 5v5 game.
Interesting.
Yeah, I did. I had a lot of fun playing 5v5. It just, more people on the pitch meant there was like more dynamic ball movement. You know, it was so much fun. And like the first couple of games, I was like, I'm terrible at this. And then you sort of like get the hang of, you know, how to use your teammates. And, you know, it was like what I'm sure you and I have both experienced, Christian, as fathers of young kids who were playing youth soccer, but sort of like that ramping up, you know, on speed of like, at first everybody's just sort of clumping around the ball, and then you realize, oh, that's not the best way to play this, right? Is that, I'm not, don't chase it. Everybody sort of, you know, stay in your positions, and you sort of,
you're
get
faster
the hang of
without
it.
The ball, just like this game. You're faster without the
that's
ball.
That's right. And man, it the first time I made a save as a goalkeeper, I was like, this is the best. And then making a goal is awesome, but also just facilitating stuff. And it keeps track of all your stats, you know, like how many times you stole a ball from somebody, how many times you passed it. So it really is rewarding every way you can contribute, not just like you scored the most goals. I think this game has a lot going for it. I think it could totally catch on for the streamer set. It's called Rematch. It's going to be out, what did they say?
June 19th.
Yeah,
soon.
I've been watching the gameplay. Your narration has been fantastic for the gameplay trailers that I've been throwing up on the Steam page here.
Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah. I really, I'm not somebody that I probably wouldn't have checked this out on my own if I hadn't been reached out to by PR. And I'm glad I did, because it really is just like instant fun. It feels like one of those things that you can play like Rocket League, like after you were playing something else, you could just play like a few matches of this just to kind of wind down at the end of the night. And I didn't play with anybody I knew. I was just jumping into randomly in quick match. And, you know, I do think it does. It certainly, if you are taking it super seriously, you will, it has the potential of getting very frustrated at your teammates for doing bonehead things. But I was having enough fun, and it sort of facilitated good team play enough that I was just like loving the you know, playing with randos experience. It was pretty cool.
It gives me hope that this can fill, and it's something also that Alex Solman and I talked about in one of the seasons of Feeling This, of a NBA Jam void.
Oh yeah.
And while Rocket League kind of scratches that itch, and some fighting game modes kind of scratch that itch, listening to you talk about Rematch, Jeff, I feel like it might be that perfect evolution of what is a modern NBA Jam or NBA Street or FIFA Street or Mario Strikers, which Nintendo, you know, has kind of keep doing. But this sounds awesome.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the hook there is that all the progression is cosmetic, right? You're unlocking track suits and shoes and hairstyles and, you know, sunglasses and stuff like that. None of it, to my mind, at least in this, you know, limited preview, who knows what the final game is going to have, but it didn't get into the like crazy wacky place. It was all kind of legit, even if the environments are kind of fantastical. It never got into like you're wearing a, you know, fruit on your head or anything like that.
So I don't know if that'll be compelling enough to people, especially people that are serious soccer fans that are like, well, I want to play, you know, the team that I actually root for. It doesn't have any branding like that. It does look like a cartoon. So I, you know, there's things that could turn people off from it, but I think all the folks that love stuff like Rocket League, this is the same itch being scratched. It's the same, like, competitive, very fast, immediate gratification. Matches don't last too long. You're in and you're out. You're on to the next one. You know, there's a lot of really positive things going for Rematch.
I wonder if it will get a PS Plus or Game Pass launch. I mean, Rocket League had that. I think it was PS, whatever the version of PS Plus was. What is it, $30 to buy? I feel like, not that it needs it, but I feel like something like that, you know, requires a player base.
I don't know what the price point is. I suspect it'll be relatively low. And I think, you know, if this is like a, you know, $20 entry or...
It's $30 like, bucks on Steam is what it shows for the base version.
Yeah. So I think that's, you know, I think that's reasonable. I hope it's a Game Pass game. I think this game would crush on Game Pass.
I mean, it's not looking like it is a Game Pass thing as of now.
Yeah.
I'm trying to load the Xbox page for it, but it doesn't
have... Xbox's press conference is June 8th, so there's time.
All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. But Brian Shea, man, so much fun having you on the show. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to come on and chat with you guys. It's been a lot of fun, and yeah, great episode, I think. You guys did awesome.
Thanks. Appreciate that. Tell folks where they can check out you and all the cool stuff you do at Game Informer.
Yeah, sure. So GameInformer.com is the obvious destination that you should go to. And, you know, we're getting things back up and running over there. This is just phase one of how we're aiming to come back in the biggest way we possibly can. Stay tuned for our next phase, which, you know, might feature something a bit more tactile, hopefully, in the coming months. And outside of that, you can find me on social media. I'm on Blue Sky and Instagram at Brian P. Shea. And then you can find the All Things Nintendo podcast wherever you get your shows, as well as YouTube.
Very cool. Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
If I'm not supposed to say this, sorry, David. I'm going to be joining David Chan, a guy you might know, and Patrick Klepek to talk a little bit Last of Us Season 2.
Ooh, nice.
On the Hobes. Here every week? Soon. No, not every week.
Oh, okay.
Just, you know, a little flavor. Okay. A little flavor here and
love
there.
It.
So folks can look for that because they are decoding that, as Dave and Patrick do so well. Love that show and love what they do breaking down TV. So I'll be joining them for that very soon. Maybe by the time you're listening to this, you can pop over there and listen to that. And I'm also on Blue Sky as Christian Spicer. This show is there as DLC Hype Train. And I write a free conversational newsletter folks can find on Substack, christianspicer.substack.com. I've been playing with video newsletters, but also the original traditional written newsletter. The next one I'm working on, it might be the second to next one, but the one I'm working on right now is I'm wrestling with this idea that I rarely replay my favorite games, while I will often replay slop.
Interesting.
So that's the premise. We'll see where it takes us.
I have the exact opposite problem.
You're a man of culture and taste is what you're saying.
I constantly replay my favorite games. And then like, I'm like, I probably shouldn't play that new game that everybody's super excited about, like Blueprints or anything like that. It's like, no, I'm going to replay Final Fantasy X for the 12th time.
Well, you know, at least you're doing the good stuff. All right. My situation remains the same. If you've listened to this, what I want to use this moment to talk about again is that I'm raising money for Providence Cancer Institute. I'm running 200 miles with a team of other people that won't get sleep. This is going to happen at the end of August, but we need to raise money now. RunJeffRun.com is the website, or at least the link that you can go to donate. Really trying to get to that goal of $20,000. We came out slow. I'm not going to lie. We came out slow, much like I do at this race. I came out slow, but I'm hoping we can get across the finish line. And I need your help. RunJeffRun.com. Any amount, even if it's just $1, $5, $20, whatever you can spare to get us a little closer to that goal would be very, very much appreciated. runjeffrun.com. All right, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts.
Hey, give us a suggestion of what to do this week. Give us a parting gift. This is your parting gift.
Brian, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
Oh, man. So we are coming up on a week that is jam-packed with nerdy stuff to stream. You know, the Daredevil Born Again season has been terrific so far, and we are getting the, I believe, the season finale this week, Tuesday night. I cannot be more excited for that. Meanwhile, you know, we also have the beginning of Last of Us season two, as well as the beginning of Andor season two.
Woo-hoo-hoo!
What a stretch of nerdy content, and I'm so here for it. Also, I finally took this weekend as an opportunity while my partner was out of town to catch up on the latest season of Invincible. And
oh, so good. Oh,
man, I don't know. Like, it dawned on me midway through the season. I was like, this is just Dragon Ball Z at this point. Like, and I mean that in the best way possible. I'm like, I'm watching anime. Like, I'm watching Dragon Ball Z written by Robert Kirkman right now. And I am here for it. That season was incredible. The last few episodes were top tier superhero comic book media. And, you know, I think that we are eating good right now if we are, you know, fans of universes and fans of, you know, just nerdy multimedia.
Agreed. Yes. What a time. What a time to be alive. Christian Spicer, what is your parting gift?
You listen to the show enough, you know I love pop punk. You know I love Blink 182. Blink 182's bassist, Mark Hoppus, has put out an autobiography called Fahrenheit 182. It's available now in hardback and also an audiobook, which he narrates. And it's excellent.
Nice.
It's like 360 pages, but like a Blink song, it's just easy. It's just easy. He talks about everything. My only critique of the book would be that it's maybe surface level on some things, but that's just because I love Blink so much that like I could do 300 pages just about the writing of Damn It. You know, like I'd be like, yeah, tell me everything. And this kind of feels like he's flying you through everything that's happened, because what an incredible life, you know, one in a million chance thing that kind of kept happening to him. But if you are at all interested in Blink or grew up listening to Blink or curious about the Southern California pop punk scene and kind of that ride, Fahrenheit 182 is an incredible book and an easy read that I think you can get through in a weekend if you just crack it open.
Very cool. You heard Brian talk about the cornucopia of wonderful TV that is happening right now. I'm going to add another one on the pile, another nerdy, cool thing. The new season of Black Mirror has hit Netflix. I have loved Black Mirror for, you know, since it debuted.
Oh,
and I have also, had a, you know, some letdown by Black Mirror. I think the last season was pretty mixed. I had some real highs and some misses. New season. I have not watched all of them, but this show is back with a vengeance. Really, really good stuff. Black Mirror, of course, a anthology series, kind of like Twilight Zone, where every episode is a completely different thing going on. And it's all about technology and sort of like what happens, maybe not tomorrow, but the day after tomorrow. Good, good stuff. I highly recommend, if you kind of veered away from Black Mirror in the past, come back, because it is excellent. Season 7, I believe, is the newest
uplifting
one.
As ever, you know, real feel good.
Oh, not that, but
especially not the first episode of the season, which is what I watched right before joining this episode.
Such a good one, though.
It's,
oh my gosh.
It's very good. I love the cast, and I walked away going, oh, okay, well, I guess I have to be peppy on a podcast now.
Well, you did a good job. I will never. All right, we got a listener suggested parting gift as well. This comes from Eric, who says, for your consideration of a potential parting gift, I thought I'd share a personal plug, if that's okay. I've always enjoyed writing long form short stories and also song lyrics. And thanks to technology, I have finally been able to turn those song lyrics into actual music. and was able to release several albums last year. Several. Anyway, leading... What's that?
Several?
Yeah,
in a year? Right?
I know, that's pretty impressive.
Goodness gracious.
Anyway, leading up to last year's election, I wrote an album called All That Ails Us that I thought you might enjoy, or that might be too depressing to recommend. But regardless, it's a thing, and I made it, and I thought I'd share. For what it's worth, I appreciate all you two put out into the world. Keep up the positivity regardless of what ails us. Sincerely, Eric, or E. William Nutter, as I'm listed on the streaming platforms. I checked out All That Ails Us, and I think that Eric is underselling it. It's really good. It's really impressive. If this is his first foray into music production, he made it sound like, oh, I just went bleep, blop, bloop with technology and I put my song lyrics in and like he used AI or something. Boy, that's not what it sounds like. It's really good. All That Ails Us. I was very impressed when I checked it out. It's on Spotify, Apple Music, anywhere you get music. So
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, I was very impressed with it. I was like, these are bops. Some of, you know, it's you know, the music, the lyrics are heavy, but some of the songs are really, really, really great. So thanks, Eric. If you'd like to have your parting gift read on the show, send it to us, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. All right. That's it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Brian Shea and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those fun bumpers. Our theme song was composed by White Cube, which is Jason Sherry and T. Ryan Arnold. You can always get merchandise for our show by going to our store, which is store.dlcpod.com. Of course, our biggest thanks are always reserved for our patrons who make this show possible, without whom we would not be here. You can become one at patreon.com/dlcpod. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.
Kick off summer with Memorial Day savings at Lowe's. Right now, get 5 Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. Plus, get up to 40% off select major appliances and save an extra $50 on every $500 you spend on select major appliances $396 or more. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 5/28. Mulch offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.